Hi everyone, thanks for being in the room. I'm going to stand a little bit over here. Does that help people hear me in the back? I also thought I had 20 minutes, and I understand I have 15, so I'm going to talk really, really fast and like fly through some slides. So buckle your seatbelts. So today, as Lisa suggested, I'm going to talk about public deliberation as a method or an approach to public engagement, and one that is particularly well-suited to the public health arena, and I'm going to defend the idea that it's an ethical approach to gathering public input about public health priorities. My interest in public deliberation might be worth noting. It came on the heels of publishing the results of an empirical study that colleagues and I did while I was a Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Health and Society Scholar. And what we did was we used focus groups in tandem with a social choice experiment to gather insights into the public's views and values as it related to social inequalities in health, what we often call health disparities. And although the results of the study were interesting and they got published and both of those things were good things, on hindsight, I realized I made the judgment that the methodologies we used were quite inadequate to the questions that concerned me most. And that dissatisfaction led me to Susan Gould, who's well known in the United States for using public deliberation as a method of public engagement in the arena of health care and setting health care priorities. That conversation led to many, as so many conversations in academia do, because I guess we like to talk or something. And now Susan and I have been engaged in the last couple of years in developing a project we call Public Health Chat. Chat coming from her original study, Choosing Healthcare Priorities Altogether, and in our arena it stands for Choosing Health Priorities Altogether. So at the end of my remarks, if I have time, which I probably won't, because now I've learned what the accurate time of my talk is, I'll tell you a little bit. I'll describe Public Health Chat, or I'll just throw up a slide and you can look at it. So in the next bit of time, I'm going to try to do four things: identify the core features of public deliberation, discuss the promises and pitfalls of deliberative processes, distinguish these from participatory processes or public participation, and make the case that deliberation has a place in public health. And so by way of context, let me just say that deliberative experiments, as you may or may not know, I don't know, are proliferating around the globe. There are innumerable forms and models of public deliberation, and they're being used across social sectors in education policy, environmental policy, space and technology, increasingly in healthcare and bioethics. In 2011, the Institute of Medicine published a report called Essential Health Benefits. They devoted an entire chapter to public deliberation and called for more of it in the health policy arena. And ARC, the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, is undertaking a major study of best practices in public deliberation. So we might ask, you know, what's all the excitement about? And to get to that question, we have to have some understanding of what it is. So let me say as a caveat that there's a lot of debate about precisely what it is and what it isn't. And I'm going to throw up this list as a way to begin with some quotes from folks that I thought captured some key aspects of public deliberation, a form of public discussion that seeks to find practical collective solutions to challenging social problems. Well, that's pretty broad. So we can get maybe a bit more specific. And the next quote induces reflection on preferences, values, and interests in a non-coercive fashion. So you're beginning to get maybe a thicker sense of what we might mean by public deliberation, followed by another quote that's even more granular. Public deliberation aims at producing reasonable, well-informed opinions in which participants are willing to revise preferences in light of discussion, new information, and claims made by fellow participants. And then my colleagues and I took a stab at describing what public deliberation is. It came out earlier this year, and we said public deliberation engages ordinary citizens with diverse perspectives in reasoned and respectful discussion about important social issues in search of well-informed proposals that deliberators will view as legitimate. I'm surprised the editors let us get away with that sentence. But as these quotes might suggest, deliberation is really talk-centric. There's an enormous amount of attention devoted to parsing what kind of talk will achieve certain kinds of ends. And both practitioners and scholars of deliberation tend to call this democratic talk. There's this phrase, democratic talk, and here I'm putting up a quote from some of our leading Deliberative Democrats, that would be lowercase d, important to note in this political season, they say, ideally, participants in deliberation are engaged with mutual respect as free and equal citizens in search for fair terms of cooperation, the emphasis there being mine. So ultimately, they seek a better democracy, not by supplanting or replacing our democratic institutions and practices like voting, but rather by augmenting these democratic institutions and practices with vibrant forums and venues for deliberative exchange. And so let's take another cut then at what we really mean by deliberative, intentionally deliberative talk. What is it? So what are the core features? And I'm going to put up a list that I make no pretension is exhaustive or uncontroversial, but as I did my sweep and have been immersing myself in this for the last couple of years, I think this is a representative sort of list of characteristics. Public deliberation involves ordinary citizens. Public deliberation arose in part with the view of some that expert-driven policy had failed in really important respects. Ordinary citizens, with an emphasis on being very inclusive, especially including voices that are often at the margins of power. More about that to come, because it's really hard to do. That this deliberative talk is informed, nonpartisan information being provided in a variety of formats and ways, that it involves reason giving. Again, a really interesting piece of deliberation because it's evolved as the literature and practical experiments have evolved as to what constitutes a reason and what constitutes reason giving. This is deliberative talk that is value-based. I mean, evidence is critical to this sort of exchange. But ultimately, we are engaging people about what ought to be done, what ought our priorities to be. These are value-laden normative judgments. And in the exchange, there's this idea that deliberative talk can be transformative, which is to say that in the process of articulating your view and defending that view or justifying that view and listening to alternate positions and alternate reasons, that we might just transform our ideas about what ought to be. So it's perhaps optimistic, but there's this idea that our preferences aren't given, rather they're not fixed. And then finally, this is another thing that's been interesting to watch evolve from the original literature to the third wave, as it's called, that we're not really seeking consensus for important reasons that we could talk about, or even the common good, but at the very least, common ground. And then finally, there is this idea that there should be meaningful linkages with policy. Various ideas for what those linkages look like, which we could talk about. So in various ways and to different degrees, I want to suggest that these features show up in these models. I'm not going to list them. These are some of the better known deliberative models that are out there. You can go to a website called Participedia, where you can read about all sorts of deliberative experiments that are going on around the world. And so let's get back to the question, why? Why public deliberation? And here I want to treat the question generally. I'll give you my defense of it for the public health arena in a few minutes. But what are the promises? Well, that we'll get something more than top-of-mind opinions, something less, not so reflexive, but more reflective. We'll get considered judgments. And there's the idea, and there's some data to support this idea, that deliberation can cultivate a public spiritedness, a civic sensibility, if you will, that people move from I reasoning to we reasoning, from what are my interests and what do I think to what ought we to do. And third, that we may get better, that we'll get better, a better process and better outcomes in the process. What do we mean by better? Well, we might mean more fair, more equitable, more sustainable decisions, and certainly more transparency, and hopefully in the end more accountability among agency officials, among government officials, whoever the sponsors of the deliberation are, and in the end that we might achieve something like a sense of legitimacy of our sort of democratic apparatus. Now, this is the sunny side of public deliberation, right? This is the happy side. This is when everything's going really well and things can go really not so well, and there are pitfalls to public deliberation. I mean, you can do it poorly, you can do it really well and then ignore your deliberative output. both of which are bad things to do because you just do you've achieved the antithesis of what you hope for. You right, you're likely to alienate a public that you've bothered them by investing their time, and potentially have bred a bit mistrust and cynicism. But I want to just note two worries that haunt me, and I don't have time to talk about them in any detail, but I'll quickly say that I think that public deliberation runs a risk of not including voices but excluding voices, and it might do so in at least two ways. One, you might simply fail to get members of marginalized groups, non-dominant groups, in the room. People have worked really hard to get members of these groups in the room and failed. Really well-intended people. But you might also get them in the room and then design the forum in such a way and have expectations for it such that you render them silent. And if not literally silent, figuratively silent. And we could, if you're interested in what I might mean by that, I'd be happy to talk about it further. It actually, in one case, we can tack back to this idea of reason giving, what counts as a reason, and the forms of conversation and talk that need to be included in the conversation so that we aren't just operating with some sort of hegemonic idea of discourse. So the other real concern for me is that deliberation can presuppose as given institutional contexts and distributions. And this is vitally important, I think, in public health, particularly as we've come to realize the need to act on things that are outside the jurisdiction of public health, to act on the social determinants of health, the upstream determinants of public health. And you could imagine using this in a public health arena in such a way that those things aren't even seen or given. And we've tried to design public health chat in a way that puts this right back in the mix. You know, ever the optimist, despite these very serious concerns, I remain committed to public deliberation as a process with promise for public health. And I'm going to defend it here in a minute, but I want to quickly, and very quickly, because I just see that I have 5 minutes, I very quickly want to distinguish deliberation from participation. I do not have to tell this crowd at this meeting that public participation means many things and different things to different people and different sets of people. And so, as a person who's been doing participatory bioethics for more years than I care to count, when I began to look at the participation literatures, plural, I developed this little list of the ways we might talk about participatory processes. And we might talk about participatory development, budgeting, health research, which we might call any variety of things, CBPR, among others, participatory health promotion, which may or may not involve research, participatory policymaking. And I start with this list rather than a stab at a definition, because definitions actually vary quite considerably depending on the purpose and the context. So I'm going to throw up this next slide, which violates every PowerPoint rule. Look at all those words. You can read them if you want. I'm not going to read them, but what I will tell you is if you were to read them, you'd see some interesting things which would evolve. Here, let me just go to the next slide, because this will be very efficient, and efficiency is an important value, as we know. What you would see across those definitions is what Lynn Morgan calls a definitional divide in participatory processes or in participation, which is this utilitarian view that participation is viewed as a means to achieve project goals efficiently, effectively. It doesn't really matter that it happens in the community per se. If a project is externally developed and it plops and you plop it in and you get an efficient result, that's great. You've done participation. There's a much more robust notion of participation that views it as an end to empower the community to define the problem and create a locally controlled process to address it. I don't know if those two things are mutually exclusive, but I imagine that in practical context, they often are. So I told you I was going to relate to tell you how deliberation is different from participation. And when I started off on this project, it wasn't clear to me which was the bigger bucket of activity, and I think I've decided that the bigger bucket is participation. My both practical experience and scholarly endeavors have led me to view participation as it involves a far broader kind of breadth of activities. But there are shared aspirations and ends between deliberation and at least the type of participation I'm most interested in, better processes, better outcomes in the ways that I've described there, a more engaged and informed community or polity, a more robust democracy. But deliberation is different. It utilizes, it deploys a more narrow means. It's really interested in creating a certain kind of communication space. And it is very interested in this idea in trying to instigate us as citizens to think collectively about a shared problem. And it is interested in decision-making. I think I can defend this. I feel a bit wobbly about this last one, but decision-making more so than action, which is not to say that there aren't serious commitments to linking deliberative output with policy and ultimately action. There are. But the deliberation itself is really focused on trying to get quality deliberative output that then can have a role in shaping action. So why might we want to use this in the public health arena? And I would start with a background comment that, you know, we all know that baked into the very identity, values, ideals, principles of action of public health is this notion of public participation, right? And I think that deliberation makes a very nice complement to many of the participatory processes that are so well used and well known in public health, but moreover, the very nature of the topic. So what is public health? I think we can say many of us in this room probably believe it's a public good, it's a concern of all of us, it's the places and spaces that connect, where we're sort of connected, where we're interacting, and deliberation holds out this promise to get us thinking well, thoughtfully, deeply about those public, about that kind of public good. Again, the promise around more public-spirited proposals, I can give you specifics from Susan Gould's, my collaborator's data, where people have given up benefits, personal benefits, to enhance the overall collective, more sustainable decisions, and very interesting data about people who go through a good deliberative process view the process as reasoned and fair, even when they disagree with the decision that the whole group made. So deliberative structures are often comprised of various iterative rounds of reasoning. They reason as individuals and small groups as a whole group, and then again as individuals. And what we found is that even if in that whole group deliberation, when people disagree, when asked, well, what'd you make of that process? They'll say, well, it was reasoned and fair. I didn't agree, but you can't dispute the process. So I think my time is up. I'm going to throw up a slide. I feel like an elephant, a pregnant one. Don't they gestate for something like 21 months or something? Well, I'm overdue. This project we have, it is both deliberative in its intentionality and content in terms of the structure, but it is community-based in that we're each working with a community partner, I in Oregon, she in Michigan. It is community-based also to the extent that the project taps into the needs and the processes underway in each region. We use a deliberative structure. We use a computer population health computer simulation model as the evidence base. It involves both upstream and downstream and everything in between interventions, and it has other interesting features that I'd be happy to talk with you about should you have interest. And on that note, let me say thank you. Okay. I've never talked.
Thank you so much, Erica. We have time for a couple of
Susan and her colleague, Nancy Baum, and some others did a study of local health departments to see how decisions, you know, this study probably better than I do, which is, you know, there's something to say out loud. But they did a study of how resource allocation decisions were made. And even though we have this idea of public participation being so important in public health, public input was low on the list. Evidence wasn't very high up either, by the way. Yeah. Those are problematic.
Much that research was about how people make how the local health directors make explicitly ethical decisions, things that they have hung the label of ethics on. So that there's a little bit of a just to clarify that.
Okay. Well, so I'm sure that's a very important point that I need to track it down and understand.
I
appreciate it.
One other question.
Go ahead.
I think you have to clarify and advise you. The problem is that you have political interest in all the rules, and the political interest of the executives may be really different from the population. So, but still, they have their political arena they want to bring in. So, don't you think there is a kind of explosive element in your system, and how you plan to control it?
Are you suggesting it's explosive to bring the public into deliberation or into?
You by yourself mentioned that one of the problems is that they will set the discussion in a line. So that line may be, the group may come to this post with a political idea that they want to bring up. Mm-hmm. And you let them speak. I mean, let them speak is good. Mm-hmm. But are you sure you can control?
Right, so no, not sure we can control the output, but there's a lot of effort gone into controlling who's in the room such that it is inclusive and representative. And these sessions are very closely, carefully monitored so that everyone has a say, and thus any particular view, political or otherwise, does not dominate and swamp the discussion. Good facilitation is a very nuts and bolts issue. It's one that deliberative practitioners spend a lot of time thinking about, talking about, and trying to get right. But your point is a really important one. But in the end, if bringing the public in, if you believe that the public should have a voice in these important decisions, then
I do believe in civil disobedience. I do believe it 100%, but I know it can be dangerous. I mean,
right.
It can be dangerous to the system and to what you want to achieve. That is why I bring the question.
Well, your point is so important because it reminds me that when we talk about participation, we mean things like sit-ins and protests and more confrontational forms. Participation. Deliberation is a little bit more weak knee. We're trying to create this more controlled space where each representative and people have a genuine opportunity on the basis of information to engage with their fellow citizens. You know, whether we can achieve that is always the day of question. But I really appreciate the point. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Thank you.